Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, along with former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, provide the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Brought to you by Baptist Health and by Everbank. Jaguars Thursday begins right now. Right now.
You want to take the controls, JP, just for a little while?
Are you sure?
Yeah, you go ahead.
Hey, well, from the HananiahAutos.com studio at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Thursday. JP Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli. Phone lines open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. I'll be here for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, hey, Jeff, you're here and Tony for 10 minutes, man. You're the driver.
Oh, we were looking at each other like, okay, you're in the host chair.
Well, you're going to drive for a little while, and then we're going to kick you out of here, and then we're going to have a great show.
Yeah.
Right, my memories of one of the greatest Jaguars to ever wear a jersey.
Okay, what do you got?
Who do you think?
The guy sitting across from me.
Well, I mean, that's
talking about saying Curtis.
Curtis, man.
Oh,
Jackson DeVille.
Of course, yes.
You know, because you know what? I will say this. Of all my time of playing sports, you know, mascots, bands, cheerleaders, you know, you kind of had this indifferent attitude towards them.
I mean, Tony's kind of a mascot, just to be
clear. Well, he is.
Anyway,
now he
ahead.
Is. Yeah. But you just were kind of indifferent about him.
You have a cartoon-like figure in appearance, and you're saying, I'm?
I can't even hear you right now because your mascot looks. Go ahead.
But I can honestly say from a player's standpoint, I had great respect for Curtis Dvorak, who wore that suit for 19 years. And the reason why was, one, I thought he was a fantastic mascot. He was the best at what he did for 19 years. And I think that the respect that I had for him was kind of twofold. One, for what he did, but then also the respect that he showed the players on the field, because he never tried to clown around with the players of his own team. I mean, he did obviously to the opponent to try to, you know, stir it up a little bit, which was good. But, you know, he had great respect for the players, and then the players had great respect for him in turn, which I think is kind of rare in sports. I think it's very rare. Would you agree, Tony?
Listen, Curtis is a friend, and so I hate seeing him leave because he's a friend, and he's been around 19 years, and I think I echo what you're saying, that he's outstanding at what he did. He made it fun. I can remember several times in the huddle at TV timeouts on the field, and we would be watching over what Curtis was doing.
Absolutely.
And we'd be laughing in the huddle together and making jokes about Curtis. And, you know, when we did the – caravans, you know, with Team Teal, and then, you know, even once Shad bought the team and we continued the caravans, he was always a big part of that. He's great out in the community. Yeah, he was a great ambassador, represented the franchise in a high level manner. He was talented. He was.
But my point is,
he was great. It was fun. He is a part of the history of this franchise that is a positive, and one guy's done it. Now it'll be interesting. What happens, because we all know it's Curtis.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, if they would have said nothing about changing who's in the suit, and you got some – I don't know if you could replace – I mean, because his energy and what he did. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the next stage is, and will the average fan recognize the difference?
Well, they might.
I don't know.
But my whole point
was, we did,
is
because he's a friend. We'll miss him. He did a great job. I had fun with him.
From a player standpoint, though, you know, sometimes the mascots get a little bit carried away when it comes to joking around.
See, I go the other way.
But he never did that.
I go the other way, Jeff. Most of the time, I don't even recognize who the mascot is. I don't care about the mascot because he's not very entertaining.
Right.
Curtis was entertaining.
But I mean, he was entertaining, but he was entertaining without kind of infringing on what the players' jobs were on game day.
You know the boundaries of where he could go.
Most of the time.
Right. For the most part,
yes.
There were things that – boundaries most of the time.
Most of the time, yes.
But, I mean, I had great respect for him, and, you know, I really have enjoyed watching him and some of the things that he just took to levels that you just never would have thought that anybody could have ever done.
I got to tell you, that's
– very talented.
I think that is the – it can be the toughest job in sports. I have a very limited mascot background, but I do have a mascot background.
You were a mascot?
You did?
I was two different mascots, in fact.
Okay, fill us in.
I was Slugger the Tobacco Worm in Wilson, North Carolina. a couple of times for the Wilson Tobbs baseball team. No, that's a true story.
How many times?
A couple of times. I was the guy that had to schedule the mascot guy, but there were a couple of times where he couldn't do it.
And you had to fill in.
And I had to jump in on, like, it's kids camp day, right? So be during the day, like a community appearance or whatever. And the guy that normally wears a suit's like 5'9". Well, I'm not 5'9". I'm like 6'3", right? So I get, you know, baseball pants on, the worm torso over your head. It goes down to about mid-thigh. And the sleeves, you know, have green sleeves on the side. And you wear batting gloves. And I put the worm head on. It's still wet from the night before.
Yeah, how hot? That's hot.
Nasty. So you go out, and it's like a day kids camp, right? So I'm walking out in this worm suit, waddling out to the kids. There's 100 kids at Fleming Stadium or whatever. The first kid comes up to me and touches me on the forearm. He says, "You're not a real worm." I'm like, "Yeah, well, you got me, kid. That's what it took." The sleeves didn't go all the way down. So it was like worm, worm, worm from the shoulder. Elbow was like human arm. And then batting glove. And I forgot my arm was exposed. And what do you
do? So you just ruined a kid's day.
Apparently so. Because I wasn't a real worm.
So you're like the grumpy Santa Claus as kid.
Yeah.
Calm down.
He's like the drunk Santa Claus.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was it. And then Muggsy the St. Bernard in Salem, Virginia.
And he was the mascot for another
Salem Avalanche, yes.
And why were you
– Whoa.
I was an intern then. I had to do it. Yeah,
Salem Avalanche, yeah. But yet they have a St. Bernard. So is this like a ski rescue dog?
Yeah, it's like a St. Bernard.
And
yeah.
What town?
In Roanoke, Virginia.
Roanoke.
Yeah, Salem.
They don't have enough snow in Roanoke to have that kind of a nickname for starters. But then on top of that, having a St. Bernard dog, like he's going to rescue you.
How many Jaguars have you seen in North Florida?
See? That's a good point.
That's a great point.
are we going to parse, you know, mascot and everything else?
The point is,
just enjoy it.
Very limited scope here, but kids are mean, man. They kick you. They pull your tail. They're just – and it's hot, man. It's a physically demanding job, and you have to know how to act and be consistent doing it, and he did it for 19
years. He's talented.
Years. It was awesome.
Curtis is a talented individual. I take my hat off because there was days when we'd be sweating out there. It'd be hot and hard, tough in the game, and he's running around that suit, and I only can imagine how hot he was there doing what he did. And he was outstanding. It'll just be interesting to see who the next person, because it could be a male or female, right, is in that suit. And how – because really what – most people don't know this. We do. Jackson DeVille was Curtis's personality.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like that outside the suit. Curtis is crazy. He's a nutso. I mean, he's full of energy.
Not like hospital crazy, but crazy.
Close, though. Close to hospital crazy. Close. But high energy, wants to have fun, entertainer, says stupid things all the time. And so he gets into the suit. His personality come out, and that's what the great mascots do. So it'll be interesting who the next mascot is and what their personality be, because that's going to be who the next cat is.
Well, I told this story on Jaguars Today earlier this week. The Philly Fanatic started in, 1978,
that's right.
I believe, right?
Is that the best mascot nationally known?
Probably the Famous Chicken is right up there, too.
Okay.
Ted Gianolis, yeah. He's been the same guy for 30, 40 years. Same guy doing it.
Same guy.
Ted Gianolis, yep. He still does a tour. But the Philly Fanatic, the original guy, was an intern for the team and did it from 78 until, 1993. 15 years, right? And then they got another guy, and he's done it since then. So they've had two different Philly Fanatics. So the original guy set the standard, and then another guy just carried it on. So there's it's possible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sure. Very much possible. There's a lot of talented people. But long story short, it'll be, nuts. Listen, the game goes on. We continue to play when players and everything else. So it's not like, you know, but for us who know them, and for the people, I mean, I think once it gets going, people recognize, they'll forget, okay, it's the cat. Just like, you know, anything that moves on. But for all of us who know him and who he's a friend, you know, we'll miss seeing him around because he was fun. I love Curtis, man. He was great at appearances.
How does that interview process work? Okay. Okay. I'm just out of curiosity here. Okay. Do you have a checklist? Are you willing to bungee jump off the light tower of Everbank Field?
I disagree. It
that'd be a no. I'm
no,
out.
It doesn't go like that. This is how the interview goes. I think you would do. Tell me. Explain to us how you see the cat evolving if you become the cat. Where would you take the character? Because that's what Curtis did. He took it. I don't think anyone told him what to do. You're the mascot. No, you're the cat.
He invented it.
And so now the next person you hire, if I'm hiring him, I would say, first question, tell me, where do you take the cat? Who is he? Where do you, I mean, so because that's what you want to know. Because then it doesn't matter if they jump off buildings or do whatever. It's, I always thought that stuff, I always thought, I'm like, Curtis, you're crazy for doing it.
Yeah.
But that was secondary. That's not what made him a great mascot.
No.
Because you could get any
bungee
cord jumping crazy
idiot to jump off the building.
Anyone. But what made him great was his personality and the energy and what he did and the personality the cat took on during the games. So that's what I want to know. If I was interviewing somebody, if JP wanted to come be the cat after a St. Bernard and the tobacco worm experience, I would say, JP, tell me where you want to take the cat. How does it evolve? Who is he? Or who is she?
And a lot would be told about that when they get in the suit for an audition, too. Absolutely. That's part of the process, I'm sure.
Are you gonna, how many people are auditioning?
I might be the most, internally, I might be the most qualified.
Are you going to be the interim, Jackson DeVille?
No, I'm not.
Now, how
no
many
chance.
People, do we know? Like, how
you
many
guys
people
would
are,
love that, though.
How many people are interviewing? I mean, is there, I don't know. Has
think,
it started?
I don't think it started yet. I don't know. They're going to keep it kind of relatively quiet.
Are they going to have open auditions like they do for The Roar?
Great question.
Yeah. I'd like to have a camera for that.
For the Roar?
Yeah.
No.
The mascot.
No, for the mascot.
Oh, I thought you meant for the
Roar,
too.
No. Don't lie. For the Roar, too.
Well, JP would.
It's okay.
But that'd be cool. Open audition. Film it all. I mean, you could make a TV show out of that.
Yeah, I don't know if there's big enough following for a TV show right now.
Well, if people have any great Jackson DeVille memories, we want to hear it. Yeah. 355-NFL1, that's 355-6351 or 1-800-355-NFL1. And while we say goodbye to JP, JP, I want you to read a card.
Okay.
So you at least earn your worth here tonight.
Thank you. Cleats and cocktails tonight for the women's club, by the way. That's where I'll be tonight. Republic Services is the undisputed leader in recycling in Northeast Florida. They're the official waste provider of the Jags, proudly serving the residents and businesses of Northeast Florida for over 30 years. Call Republic Services for all of your waste and recycling solutions, and they will take it from here. As will Jeff and Tony on Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Prime Sport is the leading global sports travel and event management company, offering corporate and fan travel packages and hospitality events for corporations, professional sports teams, and fans. For more information, visit PrimeSport.com. Prime Sport is the official sponsor of the 2015 Jaguars offseason. All right, let's go to the phone lines and bring up Bill on the south side. Has a little comment here about Jackson DeVille. Good evening, Bill.
Yes, good evening to y'all. Listen, I don't, you know, you were wondering whether people will notice the difference if somebody else is in the suit. Well, I think obvious. I mean, nobody can create the mannerisms that he, you know, his mannerisms. I mean, he created this character he perfected it, and I don't know that anybody can duplicate the mannerisms. And aside from all the stunts, you know, the zip lining and all of that, one of my favorite moments was when Scobie kicked that 59-yard field goal and Jackson DeVille caught the ball and comes running out from the end zone, holding it up in the air. That was a happy time. You almost feel the guy's real, even though he was, you know, a mascot. But, I mean, he just seemed so real all the time.
He did a great job. You know, the one thing you bring up there, Bill?
He was real.
Tony brought this up in a break. You associate a great memory of Jackson DeVille with a great moment on the field.
Exactly.
And Tony brought up a point. He said, you know, hey, look, when this team starts winning, is it who's in the suit going to make a difference?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He brought up a good point.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'd just like to thank him for all the years that he's dedicated to the Jaguars. I just love the man, love the character, you know. I think he was the best mascot in all of sports. I really do.
Well, I appreciate the comments,
guys.
Bill.
Great.
Right, thank you, buddy. All right, let's go talk to Andrew on the south side. Good evening, Andrew.
Hey, guys. I remember my son calling him by his name because he knew his name in the stadium one time. You know, he gets all around that stadium, and he looked at him with those mannerisms that guy was talking about and put his finger to his mouth, or his paw to his mouth, and was like, don't say it again. And then my son was in a contest, a dance contest, when he was about 8 years old with another guy, and my son won it, and Jackson picked him up and threw him up in the air. I mean, it's that energy that's infectious and keeps us coming back.
Yeah.
Definitely looking forward to what happens next, but I think we'll always be able to tell the difference. He's one in a million.
Thank you, Andrew. Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch and see what happens next, but, you know, like you were saying, Tony, in the commercial break.
Look. Listen, I love Curtis. Love him to death. I think he was great. I told you I laughed my rear end off half the time I was on the field playing. But guess what? And I want to say this with all due respect to Curtis. I love him. I don't care about who the mascot is. I want to win football games.
Yeah. I'm with you.
I mean, nothing. I mean, I want. That's what this. I mean, listen. The goal isn't to have the best mascot. Now, they're not independent of each other. You can have the best mascot and best team. The goal is to win a Super Bowl and have the best team.
Yes.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think the Patriots care who the mascot is?
No.
Or do you think the Seahawks, do they even have a mascot?
I don't even know. I don't think they do.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know either. But my point is, it's about winning.
But you don't notice it.
No, you don't. Now, I'm not saying the mascot, I mean, Curtis didn't play an important part. Because, listen, my kids loved him, too. When they were younger, they thought the mascot was cool. It was fun. That was part of the experience to come to the game.
You bring up another good point there, is that, you know, is that when you have a mascot that kind of the kids kind of latch on to, that helps grow a fan base.
That's why I'm not saying he's not important. But the most important thing is winning football games.
Yeah.
And guess what? Someone else will be there, whether they're as good as Curtis or not. I mean, we all love Curtis. The reality is, they'll be entertaining. And guess what? The kids will love the mascot. Not because who's in it, because he's a mascot.
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever been to Disney with your kids?
Yeah.
They love it because these little characters are running around.
They don't know who's in.
They don't know. They don't care. And so it's about that. But the big picture for me, and not that I have no problem taking calls, and I love Curtis. I don't care who the mascot is.
You're such a Grinch.
I don't care. I mean, I will miss Curtis because he's my friend.
Yeah.
But I don't care.
But he's not going anywhere.
No, he's going to be here. I want to win football games. Let's talk about football.
Seats.
Guess what? Whoever the mascot is, Joe Fortunato could be the mascot. It is not going to make a difference about winning or losing a football game.
All right, let's annoy Tony and bring up one more caller about Jackson. Let's bring up Jonathan and Mannering. Good evening, Jonathan.
Hey, I just wanted to convey a story about Jacksonville. My son has type 1 diabetes, and the JDRF hosted a bowling outing for all the kids to get to know each other, so they're going through the same things all together. And so Jacksonville came down there and, you know, took pictures of kids and hung out with the kids. And then I don't know if it was, you know, he, for whatever reason, he picked up a ball and bowled. And of course, being who he is, he nailed it. I disagree with Tony. I agree that it doesn't matter for winning and losing, but this particular person in this particular mascot uniform is part of not only the team but the community. And I've never felt this way about a mascot anyplace else I've lived, but it'll be a loss when somebody else is in the outfit. Thanks.
Thank you, Jonathan.
I didn't say it wasn't gonna be a loss, but my goodness, this, I mean, it's like,
but you gotta admit that's big shoes to fill.
Oh yes, they probably won't be as good as Curtis.
I mean,
Curtis was great.
We talk about the games, you know, but
he was great,
I mean,
in the community.
Memories like what Jonathan
back.
Just talked about. I mean, you know, Curtis in his career in the suit did in excess of, I think he said, over 7,000 events.
Amazing. He gave back. He was great. He's a great golfer. The next guy's not going to be able to play golf the way he does in that suit. There's no doubt about it. So there's certain things like that. Because Curtis was a great athlete. Is a great athlete. I mean, he's not dead. He's just not the cat anymore. He's a great athlete. And listen, nothing against Jonathan who called or anyone else. I'm not saying, but if we're winning a Super Bowl, which all of us want to do, we're not going to be concerned about the bowling. I mean, that's a great story for your kid. I agree with that. My kids have attachment, and they love the mascot. He came to my kid's birthday when they were little. It was awesome. They thought it was great. But I promise you, we'll be more concerned about winning. Let's win. I know
you can do both, Tony.
We can do
you
both.
You can do both.
That's why I'm not discounting. I'm just saying it's a great – he's great, and he was awesome. He was an amazing mascot. And he will be missed from that standpoint as what he does in the community. I think that's the best point that Jonathan made. What he did in the community be missed more than anything.
Yep.
But I promise you, the 60-plus thousand people, I think they'd be very happy – to think the mascot was average, but the team was great. Instead of the mascot being great and the team being average.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I'm with you.
That's all I'm saying. And the funny thing is Curtis said the same thing. He said, listen, the team's good. No one's going to care who the mascot is. And that's the reality.
Yeah.
Want to win football games.
I just remember one of the moments that I had realizing how good he was. Every game that we would go to, you know, every team has a mascot and they do a skit. And you go to Tennessee and they've got that wolf thing or whatever.
Very weak.
And I'm watching them and they got two mascots. They got like a guy wolf and then a female wolf. And you're watching the skit and you're going, this really sucks. I mean, this is terrible. I mean, Jackson DeVille was doing that probably when he was in like pre-K. A skit that good.
Well, he was, you know, he was the mascot for the Virginia Hokies, too. He was the Hokie for 2 years.
Yeah, he is a Hokie.
He's a Hokie.
From Blacksburg, Virginia.
He's a lifelong mascot. Now, I guess, we'll switch gears here. We'll talk more about the team in a second. But now I think he's into TV and radio, and he's a talented guy. He'll be fine, and he'll do a good job, and life will go on, and but we will miss Curtis as the mascot.
All right, when we come back, we'll talk more Jaguars football. And just want to remind everybody, Jaguars 3-packs are on sale now. Get the best prices and locations by getting 3-packs versus single game tickets. Pick any 3 games at home this season with prices starting at just $99. Call 904-633-2000 or visit jaguars.com and get your 3-pack now. More with me, Jeff Loggeman, and Tony Buscelli on Jaguars Thursday right after this.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Jaguars Black is the first premium business program designed by the Jaguars for local, small, mid-sized, and large businesses. Jaguars Black is completely designed around the need for return on investment. To learn more about Jaguars Black, call 904-633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. Back on Jaguars Thursday, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Buscelli. Training camp opening up at the end of next month. Give me your top 3 storylines or focal points of training camp. In your mind, the top 3.
As far as you're not talking battles or anything, you're just talking overall.
Top 3 storylines for this football team. Big picture things.
Well, the first is the easiest, and that's Blake Bortles and the development of Blake Bortles, because I think this team's going to go – its ceiling is – there's a direct correlation to the ceiling of this franchise this year in Blake Bortles' improvement. That's first and foremost. Number 2, during training camp.
Because, I mean, training camp –
this is more of a season thing. I think it's a big season for Luke Joeckel. I think that's something that we'll be watching. I think he'll do it, but I think a lot. I mean, not that he has to be a Pro Bowl or anything, but just needs to see improvement. And that offensive line has to be much better.
Line, Luke Joeckel.
So that's a whole season thing.
See, I had those two things. And then the quarterback, offensive line.
The third one for me is Allen Robinson the real deal? Is he going to emerge as the number one receiver? I mean, that's the third thing. I mean. A fourth thing, if you want to go defense side of the ball, we know what we are on defense, front 7. I mean, yeah, you could talk about linebacker depth and who's going to be the 5th or 6th linebacker, but is that really something we're going to be we'll be watching it, but the average fan cares about? No. So the real defensive thing is, there's 2 defensive things I'll be watching, is who's going to end up as the free safety? That's critical. Mm-hmm. I mean, who's going to be that free safety, and who are the two – who ends up – what's the corner rotation end up being?
Mm-hmm.
You have basically 4 guys playing for three positions.
Yeah, because, I mean, the front 7.
It is what it is.
Well, I mean, everybody's going to play.
Yeah, you're going to rotate. You're going to rotate 8 off defensive linemen throughout the game.
So there's not really much conversation.
I mean, who cares
who
starts at the end of the day?
But the one topic, though, that will be talked about in training camp, and I don't want to call it a watch, but, I mean, everybody's going to want to know where Senderek Marks at. In his recovery.
See, I don't think
ACL.
That becomes an issue at all.
But it's not going to be early.
Yeah, until late in the preseason. Right. That's when you're going to wonder. I don't think – I mean, I wouldn't even be paying attention to
it. At some point during training camp.
Late training camp.
You're going to want to kind of gauge where he's at to see.
Are we still calling it training camp, Jeff?
Yeah.
Okay.
You still got to call training camp.
I thought maybe it's still like practice.
But you want to gauge where he's at to see what his availability will be.
Yes.
You know, on kickoff weekend.
That's the storyline. But really, it's about the offense. It's Blake Bortles' offensive line. For me, the three things is Blake Bortles' offensive line / Jokel. And then who's going to be your number one receiver? Is Allen Robinson the guy who can step up and grab it by the you-know-what and be that guy? Someone has to do it. Because right now, I think it's Allen Robinson. And you got Marquise Lee hurt. I mean, when's he going to be? Is he going to be ready for camp? Allen Hurns has been the most consistent guy during the OTAs. Can he? I don't know if he has.
But the one thing about Allen Hurns is that, you know, I don't know if he ever wows you.
No, there's in practice. I think there's a ceiling.
You know, yeah. There's this limited ceiling.
What
and,
he is.
You know, look, I don't ever like to put ceilings on a guy, but, you know, when you watch and.
Now, could he. The argument to that is could he become – I mean, my guess is in Cleveland and in Washington early in his career, they put ceilings on Keenan McCardell, and he ended up being pretty dang good.
Right.
And that's the type of guy that Allen Hurns reminds me of, that smart, competitive, you know, go get the ball, understands the game at a high level, reliable, always out there type of guy. I mean, that was Keenan. But you still need a number one guy, Jeff, and who's that going to be?
You know what's amazing is that since Jimmy and Keenan – the last 1,000-yard receiver was Jimmy, and that's going all the way back to 2005.
Embarrassing is the wrong word. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Shocking.
In today's game.
That this team has not had a 1,000-yard receiver since 2005.
And Cecil was close a couple times and ended up getting hurt
close
the end of seasons.
Close as with hand grenades exactly. And horseshoes. Or horseshoes and hand grenades, however you want to say that. But the reality is this, Jeff. I wonder if there's another franchise – that has not had a 1,000-yard receiver since 2005. I would bet none.
What is that?
10 years.
10 years. I mean, that's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
In today's NFL.
Most teams have two guys who get that much.
Do not have. Now, here's a question for you. Honest answer here. Who gets to 1,000 first?
Julius Thomas.
Is it Allen Robinson or is it Julius Thomas?
No, it's Julius Thomas. He's going to get there first. If he stays healthy.
Yeah. I mean,
that's the big question mark in the season is just health for him. I mean, you know, I think if there's any knock on Julius Thomas coming in or coming out of free agency or into free agency from the Broncos is his durability. Can he, you know, can he suit it up for 16 games and, you know, get through the kind of the ankle and foot and whatever?
If you're the quarterback after what you saw.
You hope so.
In OTAs and minicamp. Which guy do you think is going to be the first 1,000-yard guy?
It's going to be Julius. That's all.
Absolutely.
Watching practice, Jeff, I thought like
there
was
why?
I thought there was a rule that he wasn't allowed to throw to anyone else in certain practices because it's like.
Well, because you know what? When you watch Blake Borsota, if it's in the zip code,
he catches it.
Julius Thomas catches everything.
He goes and gets it and catches it. But this team, the biggest story, the thing that all of us will be paying attention to more than anything else, is Blake Bortles. It's just the nature of it.
Did you see the senior writer's article interview with the head coach, Gus Bradley? Obviously, I'm talking about John Osher.
Ozone, I have not seen it yet. What did he say?
He had a kind of a Q&A that was published on Jaguars.com, and I thought that Gus said something that was very telling because, you know, we all have talked and seen how Blake Bortles has, you know, has progressed, you know, and many people have asked him, well, why do you think he's progressed? You know, is it his footwork?
Right.
Is it his mechanics? And I'm like, look, I'm no expert. I'm not Tom House. I don't know great footwork. I mean, you kind of have an idea, but you don't know the finer points of playing a position.
You can tell when it's bad, though.
Yeah, but you can tell when it's bad because you look at the result.
Yeah.
You look at the ball.
Watch where
you look
the ball
at the location.
Goes.
You look at the spin of the ball. And so my point is that you just look at the ball placement and the accuracy and the velocity and everything else. But Gus brought up a good point. I'm going to read him verbatim here.
All right, read
because
it.
Because I thought this was very telling. We already know that he appears to be better on Sundays than he is in practice.
I agree with that.
So that gives us the idea that maybe he'll be even better on Sundays for us this year. Which, you know, I didn't even think about that because you remember last year when we were watching him in practice and we were like, oh, my God, that was so bad.
It was painful.
That was so bad. And even during, like, preseason, you'd watch him during the week and training camp when it was open to us.
Yep.
And we go, and then all of a sudden he'd go out there in a preseason game, and, you know, the first half was Chad Henne, and you're like, okay. And then all of a sudden Blake goes in there, and the ball's getting pushed down the field. The ball's spinning tight. He's throwing it in tight windows, and you go, where was that guy?
But we didn't see as
all
much
week in practice.
But, Jeff, we didn't see as much of that late. We saw the easy throws become hard.
Exactly.
Which that's what concerned me more than anything. And now, listen, he's looked better. Now, if what Gus is saying –
how I hear him say is like, okay, wait a second. He was awful in practice last year. He was better in the games. He looks pretty good in practice this year, so could he be really
good
in
games? Could he take another step up in the games like he did last year?
And if he does, he'll be good in the games. And then maybe next year he'll be good in practice and great in games. I mean, some guys just play better. Listen, I always thought I played so much better in games than practice. I can remember times, and one time stands out more than anything. There was a guy, I don't even remember his name, on practice squad. And we were practicing during the week. And he was giving me just fits. Tom's yelling at me. I mean, it's practice. I'm working on my stuff, but I'm trying to work on my technique and stuff, and he's going crazy.
He wants results.
This guy's bull. I mean, he's doing everything. And I'm like, he's giving me problems. So I'm getting yelled at. Go play the game that week. Well, the next week, after the game we played that week, I played fine that week and had an average week of practice. According to Tom, I was terrible. And then after that following week, the Baltimore Ravens claimed this guy off of waivers because Anthony Pleasant got hurt. And we were playing the Ravens that week.
So you were going to face this guy.
So I was going to face this guy. So we get into the game, and I will say it as humbly as I can, but I wore him. I mean, he didn't get off the line of scrimmage, Jeff. I mean, it was like – it was one of those, like, hands meet chest and feet stop.
Bye-bye.
Like, it's over.
Think he might have been a little overconfident.
Well, I told him during the game, and I reminded him early and often, this ain't practice, son. This is the real deal now. Because for me, I was working on stuff in practice trying to get better because I believe in practice. You got to do that. But there was an urgency that came upon me in the game, like almost a fear of like, this is life or death. And I don't – like getting beat is not an option because if I get beat, that guy gets hit and we might lose.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the intensity and the urgency would go up. I'll be honest with you. That wasn't there in practice. Maybe that's bad, right, wrong, indifferent, but I'm just being – I would work hard. Not that I wouldn't work hard in practice. And I think Blake works hard. But come game time, there was like so, – I mean,
it's
not
different.
That,
not
that it was – you know, some people say, well, you just turn the switch. I wasn't turning any switch. The switch was being turned for me internally, like, it's time to go.
Well, you learned it early on because I think that was probably the biggest adjustment that I had because, you know, when you first get in the NFL and you didn't have preseason because I busted you up.
Yeah, you cheap shot at me, but yeah, go ahead.
But going in the preseason, a lot of guys think when they finish up preseason, they think they got it. You know, because, you know, the level of skill in the preseason is not nearly what it is on game day when it comes to real Sundays. And so some guys come out of preseason with kind of a skewed vision of what reality really is. And then when they get to the regular season, all of a sudden the intensity ramps up, the speed ramps up, the complexity ramps up, everything is heightened. And some guys just get lost from that transition from preseason to the regular season. And the ones that thrive are the ones that have the ability to elevate their level of play when, and you could use a million different quotes, when the lights get bright,
right,
when the light
right.
turns on, when the whistle blows, whatever you want to call
and
it.
Maybe that's Blake.
Maybe
it is. I mean, and listen, I know for me, that was, I mean, for whatever reason, and then when we got in the playoffs, because it goes up, you know that, you've been there.
It goes up to another level.
But, like, the more it got, I don't know if I focused more or I was tuned in, but it was almost out of desperation for me. It's like, okay, like you can't, like, there's no margin. You got to go, you got to play at a high level now. And maybe that's it. I don't know. I mean, now, because there's other guys that are just like unbelievable in practice and then disappear
on game day.
And now there's some guys, Keenan McCardell was great in practice.
And consistent
great,
in the game.
Great in the game.
Same player.
I mean, everyone's a little bit – all I want out of a player in practice, if I'm a coach, and this is what I tried to do, is give great effort and work on your craft. Because if you give great effort and work on your craft, that will translate to the game, in my opinion.
All right, we come back. I want to get your thoughts on the greatest acquisition player and coach.
All right.
As well as we're going to take a 360-degree look around the league. But, folks, Jaguar group tickets are on sale now. Get exclusive pricing and seating options like the all-new Field VIP Club and Jaguar's Executive Suites. You can also put together fundraising and birthday parties. For more information on a Jaguars group experience, go to jaguars.com or call 904-63-2000. More of Jaguars Thursday with me, Jeff Loggeman, and Tony Baselli right after this.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Well, it is Thursday, but on Wednesdays, you can join John Osher and J.P. Shadrick for Jaguars.com Live. That's every Wednesday at 1 p.m. They'll have special guests, keep you informed with the latest Jaguar news, and take your social media questions. Jaguars.com Live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. on Jaguars.com. Best acquisitions in the offseason for the Jaguars, and really have two categories because you had a changing of not the entire offensive staff, but a good portion of it.
No. I guess Frank
Stoffel. Ron Middleton.
I mean, Frank Stoffel stayed on as an advisor.
Jerry Sullivan.
Sullivan and Ron Middleton stayed. Yep.
Let's start with the coaches.
Okay. Easy for me. Doug Marrone.
Who? Doug Marrone?
Doug Marrone.
Why?
Because I think Doug Marrone is a outstanding offensive line coach, technique-based, great teacher, fundamentals, and I think he'll make this group better. I'm taking nothing away. I think Luke Buckus is a good coach, and I think he'll – and I actually think Luke Buckus, who stayed on, went back as the number two guy on the offensive line, this will make him a better coach than he already is. And I think this will help Luke Buckus. And I think one day you'll find out that Luke Buckus is regarded the same way of a Doug Marrone as one of the best offensive line coaches in the league. But that's Doug Marrone right now. And watching him, you know, and as you know, Jeff, I love the offensive line.
You watched him a lot.
And I go down there. I love, like, my favorite part of OTAs is individual. I mean, I go down there. I like the nuances of the position. Part of it's because that's what I play. Part of it's I coach offensive line in high school now. I love different ways of communicating and how you do it and how you teach it and how you teach the run game, because there's so much to it, for hip roll, foot placement, second step, hands, creating leverage with not only the how low you are, your hand. I mean, it's just – and then you have the whole same thing in the passing game. So Doug Marrone, by far, without a doubt, in my mind, and I'm biased because it's the position I played and the position I love, is one of the best acquisitions that Gus Bradley made on the coaching staff.
I think it was great, but to me, it's Greg Olsen. I mean, for two reasons. One,
I can't argue that.
I love the way that that he spends time with every position group and coaches every position group throughout the practice, which is kind of rare. I mean, you never saw previous offensive coordinators here go and have conversations with offensive linemen, have conversations with tight ends, and have conversations with wide receivers.
You know, the closest to that was in my tenure was Kevin Gilbride.
Kevin Gilbride.
He would never go to the offensive line because – and Greg didn't spend a lot of time with the offensive line because usually the offensive line is like its own group typically. But as far as the rest of the unit, Kevin Gilbride was like that when he was here. And who else was like that a little bit when he was here was Tom Coughlin, who was the head coach and coordinator that one year.
Mm-hmm.
But not we haven't seen a lot of that. You're
no.
right.
No, and I think that to me is strong. And I love the way that he is demanding. Like, you might see a great catch or what we think is a great catch by a wide receiver. And I saw this a couple different times. And that Greg is sitting there going, attack the ball at its high point. Or use your body to position to shield the defender. You know, because a lot of this practice in OTAs and stuff are just on air. And to be able to have the forethought of saying –
it's the detail game, just like we're
so,
talking about
I mean,
with
I love
Doug
that.
Marrone. It's
and I love
detail,
that about
Jeff.
Greg. And I think that's tremendous, and I think that's going to be the biggest thing. And, you know, and it's a little – I don't want to say it's a bash of personalities, but having a strong room, because you have a former head coach in Doug Marrone, offensive line coach, Greg Olsen, who was, you know, offensive coordinator, and Jerry Sullivan's been an offensive coordinator before, and Ron Middleton has been a coordinator, a special teams level in collegiate. I mean, so having a strong room is a good thing.
And I'm trying to and Chris, you might know this. The Abraham Lincoln talked about it in his book, and people wrote it. When he hired his cabinet, he
great
had
book.
Something Rivals.
Team of Rivals.
Team of Rivals.
One of the greatest books
he had
I've
a
ever read.
Bunch of great, strong people that always didn't disagree. Mm-hmm. And were strong personalities.
From opposite political parties, et cetera.
Opposite, but they would fight and they'd get to where they needed to be because they were great leaders.
I'm glad you brought that book up because I would highly recommend
that.
You
didn't think I read books, did you?
I know, I didn't. I really didn't. Did you read? did you get the audio version?
No, I read it.
You actually read it?
I actually read it.
Team of Rivals, great read. Good recommendation, Tony. All right, now it's time to take a look around the NFL.
Don't we have to do the number one acquisition players too?
Julius Thomas. I mean, it's a no-brainer.
Well, I have two favorites before we go read the card and we'll do that. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
My favorite is Parnell and Scuda. Biggest impact, Julius Thomas.
To me, Julius Thomas, hands down.
I agree.
Now it's time for a 360-degree look presented by 360 Access. Don't mess around when it comes to game time. The 360 Access team of experts is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to make sure you have the best experience for the biggest games of the year. Visit 360access.com to learn more. I'm going to get you fired up here.
Right.
Warren Sapp.
And I'm not laughing at the severity of what he did because it's heinous, but the fact that he has not learned his lesson is just comical to me.
Fired by the NFL Network after being accused of soliciting prostitution and then assaulting said prostitutes this past Super Bowl.
And that was his first run-in with the law. The first time.
Yep. He is now accused of assaulting his longtime girlfriend, who apparently remained his girlfriend despite the indiscretion with the pair of prostitutes, and has been charged with three counts of domestic violence following an April 28th incident at a Las Vegas resort. Per TMZ, the police report alleges that Sapp threw a margarita in her face, his girlfriend, grabbed her by the arm or purse and violently pulled on her, nearly taking her down to the ground, biting her middle finger.
That's smart.
Throwing a belt at her.
Great.
And stepping on her face while wearing a pair of sandals.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, you know, first of all, how did that conversation go with his girlfriend after he got caught with the two prostitutes? I'd love to be a fly on the wall. I'll tell you how it would go in my household if I came home after getting arrested with two prostitutes. My rear end would get – I'd be getting my butt – I mean, she would have beat my rear end. But anyways, that's beside the point. I feel bad.
Warren Sapp is a bad guy.
He's got a track record, and you and I know more. You know,
I'll never forget, Tony, one time I was doing
that. He has a bad track record, and it's coming to light, and it's really – you know, it's one of those things, and I hate to say it, you get the feeling it's not going to end well for Warren.
No.
I hate that.
I did a pregame show one time, and Warren Sapp was on. It was NFL Network, you know, when they used to get guys in different games and go on and talk. And it was at the time when Albert Haynesworth, remember when he was playing?
Yeah, I remember, yep.
At a level that was just unseen. It was crazy. It was crazy good. And I said, you know, on the air with the NFL Network, I said, you know.
Most dominant three technique we've seen.
I said I'd never even seen Warren Sapp play to this level.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't as dominant as Albert Haynesworth.
No. And he got all fired up and bent out of shape.
Albert Haynesworth that year was Reggie White dominant.
No question.
That was only for 1 year.
But you should have heard his reaction, though. I mean,
whatever.
And on the air.
Who cares? I know Warren.
You played the game, have a little humbleness, okay, and a little respect for what some of the guys do now.
That's impossible. Listen, I've known Warren. Warren's always nice to me, so I want to make sure that's clear. I've never had a personal problem with him. He treated me. We got along. But not the greatest reputation around the Tampa area, especially with the media. And now he's had several instances with a prostitute, but domestic violence, you know, being physically violent with a woman. I got no time for that.
Nope.
And I just, you know, I read the article too, Jeff, and it looks like if he's convicted on the three counts, he could do 18 months in jail.
Jail time.
My guess is he'll be probably doing some jail time.
Let's end this on a positive
note. Let's change something.
Peyton Manning had a fan in Evansville, Indiana. Yep. His name was Logan Brown, a young man, and was killed in an accident.
Tragic.
Drunk driver. And Peyton Manning actually took the time to write a letter to the family and tell the family that he was honored that Logan was a fan of his after their tragic loss. And, you know, so as many times as you hear about a guy like Warren Sapp, there are tenfold the number of stories like what Peyton Manning did. And so many of them go unpublished and unheard that it's not all bad just because it's not headlines. A lot of times stories like this, if it wasn't Peyton Manning, it wouldn't even have made the news.
And here's the reality, Jeff. 99% of the guys who are in this league right now and who played in this league make a positive impact in the communities that they live in. That's the reality. And unfortunately,
it happens every day here in Jacksonville.
I mean, listen, there's countless things that go on here in Jacksonville that nobody knows about, that the players in the organization, the ex-mascot, the cheerleaders, the head coach, do to make Jacksonville a better place. Unfortunately, in all sports, NFL is the biggest, all you hear about is the negative sometimes.
All right. We're off next week. We'll talk to everybody.
Happy 4th of July.
In 2 weeks, everybody have a happy and safe 4th of July.